In November of 2008, I officiated at a wedding for a man and woman who were not Jewish. They did not identify with any religion, they were not interested in converting to Judaism, and I believe they remain non-Jewish today. But they followed the Noahide laws and admired Judaism, so they wanted to have a rabbi marry them. I determined that I was legally able to perform the wedding, so I agreed. It was definitely one of the more novel experiences of my rabbinic career so far. The big question was how to design the wedding ceremony. They wanted elements of a traditional Jewish ceremony, but I made it clear to them this would not be a Jewish wedding, and lest there be any confusion, I didn't want to use any of the standard Jewish elements. No chuppah, no ksuvah, no bracha over a cup of wine, no videographer. We ended up with a ceremony that was both Jewish and universal. It included the songs Mi Bon Siach and Mi Adir, which are usually sung as the chasan and kala walk down the aisle. I said a Dvar Torah about the marriage of Adam and Chava and Ezer Kenegdo, and in place of a bracha over wine, they drank water, and I talked about the role of water in the Torah. We recited an appropriate tefillah based on Yerushalmi to conclude the ceremony. We did not break a glass. No one shouted Mazel Tov. I didn't want to use the Jewish wedding ceremony because the Rambam actually forbids borrowing mitzvos for use outside of Judaism. If a non-Jew wants to convert to Judaism, fine. If a non-Jew wishes to follow the Noahide laws, that's fine too. But we don't try to persuade them to practice mitzvos when they aren't Jewish. But the Rambam didn't explain. Why not encourage non-Jews to borrow from Judaism? Might it not be nice if our neighbors would check their clothing for shatneys or put up a mezuzah? Wouldn't it help the price of kosher food if more non-Jews kept kosher? Let's learn a short story which describes a future messianic time and one particular mitzvah. In the future, as recorded in the Gemara, Hashem will call the nations to judgment. He will invite Nimrod to testify to Abraham's righteousness. Lavan will testify to Yaakov's righteousness. Potiphar's wife will testify to Yosef's righteousness, and so on. Then the nations will object. But we would have been righteous too if you had given us the mitzvos. Tana lanu meirosh, give us mitzvos from the start, and we will fulfill them. And so Hashem will give them a mitzvah kala, an inexpensive mitzvah, that of sukkah, to try out. Then he'll make it hot outside, and they'll leave the sukkah and kick it, and so lose their opportunity to prove their righteousness. So goes the Gemara, and it leaves me with a whole bunch of questions. Two questions in particular. First, why choose sukkah? If it's just that sukkah is inexpensive, as it was before the modern economy took over, how about covering blood from shechita with dirt, or chasing away the mother bird before taking the young, or building a low wall around drop-offs on their property to prevent people from being hurt? Second, having given them the mitzvah of sukkah, why make them so miserable? The Gemara says it's only fair, since sometimes we also overheat in the sukkah. But that doesn't really explain why Hashem would do this to them. What's it about? First, this Gemara is not literal. It's playing off of the end of Zechariah, which we read the first morning of Sukkot, in which we are told that in the future, the nations will come to the Beis Hamikdash to celebrate Sukkot. But Zechariah said nothing about heat and driving the nations out of the sukkah. The Gemara adds that part as a lesson for us about our attitude towards mitzvos. Unlike the nations of the world, sukkah is not new for us. When we think of the sukkah, we remember our history. Leman yedu doroseichem, we sit in the sukkah to recall that Hashem took us out of Egypt and protected us in the desert. This mitzvah is intimately tied into our formative years as a nation, and the bedrock covenant in which Hashem promised our ancestors that he would take care of us. Because of this history, our sukkah is not only a mitzvah hut. It's also the place where we learn to trust Hashem in the middle of a frightening desert, the home built by the first Jewish couples and in which the first Jewish families were formed, the dining room in which the first kosher food was eaten, the family room in which the first Jewish parents taught the first generation of Jewish children the Torah. The sukkah is our national nest. That's why we should love the sukkah, and why we feel love for the sukkah even when the weather doesn't cooperate. For other nations, sukkah is new. When you're trying to start a new relationship, there is no history or meaning. Even a relatively small problem can balloon. That's what happens when sukkah becomes difficult. All they have is the fact that Hashem told them to do this and then made the mitzvah difficult. They kick the sukkah in disgust. But for us, rain in the sukkah is like a disagreement between long married spouses. In the context of the greater relationship, bumps in the road are just bumps in the road. We still feel what the sukkah represents. the love between Hashem and us, and the history of Hashem's protection. We don't kick the sukkah on the way out. This, perhaps, is why the Rambam says to keep mitzvos to ourselves. Taking mitzvos out of their context misses the long-standing relationship. Anyone can opt into this package of mitzvos and gain the relationship by becoming Jewish. But transplanting mitzvos from Judaism for something entirely new misses out on that historic bond. And the observance will be an action, but without the heart meant to be a part of it. My Noahide wedding was novel and fun, and within the bounds set by the Rambam. And it was wonderful to help two sincere people have such a meaningful experience on a day that was so important to them. Beyond that, the Rambam taught me a valuable lesson, a new perspective that I try to take with me not only for Sukkah, but for all of Tishrei. Tishrei can be demanding and draining. Tishrei can be expensive. Tishrei can be relentless, one holiday after another without a break. I'm not always in the mood for all of that. But in those moments, I can remember the background, the history, the personal and national home of that mitzvah, and that can keep me going. I wrote this on Wednesday, when the forecast for the first day of Sukkot included some dampness. We may be able to sit in the sukkah, but it could be humid and unpleasant. Let's try to remember the love behind the mitzvah, those early days of our national nest, and look forward to a time when Hashem will rebuild Sukkas David Hanofales, the great Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim.